नमो विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामिनति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा। सो थैंक यू ऑल वेरी मच फॉर ज्वाइनिंग टुडे सेशन। वी हैव बीन डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम द 9th चैप्टर ऑफ श्रीमद ऑफ श्री भगवद गीता। The chapter is titled as Rajaguhya Yoga or the most confidential knowledge. So, as you know, in the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about Guni Bhuta Bhakti or Karma Jnana Ashtanga Yoga, where Bhakti is a secondary element and Karma Jnana Yoga is primary. Result of Gunibhuta Bhakti is at the most Sayujya Mukti. So that was described in the first six chapters. That is Guhya knowledge, secret knowledge. Then in the seventh and eighth chapters, Krishna described about Guhya Tama, little more confidential knowledge, which is Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti. Pradhani Bhuta Bhakti means where Bhakti is predominant, Karma Jnana Yoga is secondary. So, seventh chapter, he talks about Karma Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti. And in eighth chapter, he speaks about Yoga Mishra Bhakti. And in ninth chapter and tenth chapter, he exclusively describes about Shuddha Bhakti, which is considered to be Guhya Tama, the most confidential knowledge. So, he starts this chapter by telling, इदं तु ते गुह्यतमं प्रवक्ष्यामि अनसूयवे ज्ञानं विज्ञान सहितं यद्ज्ञात्वा मोक्षसे अशुभात्। ओ अर्जुन, ऐ एम गोइंग टू टेल यू द मोस्ट कॉन्फिडेंशियल नॉलेज बिकॉज यू आर फ्री ऑफ एंडी एंड ऐ एम गोइंग टू स्पीक अबाउट द नॉलेज अबाउट मी एंड दट इज ज्ञान एंड विज्ञान हाउ थ्रू बै बै वाट प्रैक्टिस यू कैन अटेन मी विच इज विज्ञान। I am going to speak to you about this because you are free of envy. And then he says, what is the nature of this knowledge? Rajavidya Rajaguhyam Pavitram Midamuttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartum Avyayam. He talks about the nature of this knowledge, which is Rajavidya, the highest type of bhakti in of all the types of bhakti, and Rajaguhyam, the most secret type of bhakti in comparison to the Pradhani Bhuta, Guni Bhuta, all these types of bhakti. Shuddha Bhakti is the topmost. Pavitram Idam Uttamam, no other forms of bhakti or any other practices is as purifying as Shuddha Bhakti. Pratyakshavagamam, one can directly realize the effect of practice of bhakti. Bhakti Pareshanubhavo Viraktir Anyatra Chaishatrika Eka Kala. It is possible. And Dharmyam, even though it may be observed that the practitioners of bhakti may not be practicing the regular limbs of varna and ashrama, varna dharma or ashrama dharma according to the dharma shastras, but one should understand that they are following the paro dharma. Savai pumsam paro dharma. To bhakti radokshite. Susukam kartum, and compared to the other limbs of other practices, which may involve refraining the usage of senses, which is very, very difficult, especially in the conditioned state. Bhakti involves utilizing the senses. So therefore, it is very, very pleasurable practice. And avyayam, it is the only eternal limb, eternal practice, which can be practiced at any stage, at any place, by anyone. Even after attaining, the one's goal, the practice of bhakti continues. So that is because only bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti, is beyond the three modes. Then he says, Ashraddhadana Purusha Dharmasyasya Parantapa Apraapyamam Nivartante Mrityu Samsara Vartmani. He says, but one who does not have faith in this path of bhakti, he cannot attain me and he will remain on the path of samsara. Then he says, understanding this jnana and vijnana starts with understanding the Aishwarya jnana. So if one has to understand one's relationship with Krishna, first one has to start with the Aishwarya jnana, which is understanding Krishna's Srishti Leela or his Purushavatara Leela. Okay, that is a very basic foundational understanding which is needed to progress on the path of devotional service. So, Krishna says here, Maya tatamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarva bhutani nashaham teshu avasthitaha. I pervade this whole universe by my form which is invisible to the material senses, which is the Paramatma form. Okay. And all living entities are situated in me, but I am not situated in them because I am detached. There is no relationship of mutual dependence as what we see in this material world. Every relationship is a relationship of mutual dependence. But in the case of Krishna, it is not a question of mutual dependence. Krishna is completely detached. Nachamatstani bhutani pashyame yogamaishwaram bhutabrun nacha bhutasto mamatma bhutabhavanaha. And look at my inconceivable power of my body. Even though all living entities are in me, but I am completely detached. Even though I maintain them, I protect them, but I am completely detached from them. Okay. So that is very inconceivable, because in this world, you never see anyone who is maintaining something and protecting something diligently, but having absolutely no attachment to them. This is never seen in this material world. And then he gives an example to make it little bit clear. Yatakasha stito nityam vayur sarvatra go mahan tata sarvani bhutani mastani tyupadaraya. Please understand, my dear Arjuna, that just as the ether or the sky is supporting the movement of the wind, but the ether is neither attached to the wind nor is the wind attached to the ether, in the same way, I maintain the living entities even though I am detached from them. So now someone may say, oh, just now you said it is inconceivable, Pashyame Yogam Aishwaram. So if it is so inconceivable, how could you give an example to explain it? Krishna says, look, ether and wind both are inanimate objects. They are not conscious entities. So inanimate objects by nature are detached. There is no question of attachment. Only conscious living entities can be attached. So, amongst conscious living entities in this world, you never see, one conscious entity supporting something or someone without having any attachment. That is seen only in my case. Therefore, it is still inconceivable, like that Krishna explains. Then he continues. Sarva bhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punastani kalpadav visrajamyaham. All things will enter my prakriti at the time of destruction, and at the time of creation, I create everything in my Mahavishnu form. You know, I am responsible for the creation, and at the time of destruction, all the living entities and everything will enter into my form again. Prakritim swam avashtabhya visrajami punah punah. So, being situated in Prakriti, which belongs to me, I create again and again all the living entities, which means I manifest them from within my body again and again. They are all under the control of their own previous swabhava. Avasham Prakritir Vashat. Nachamam Tani Karmani Nibadnanti Dananjaya. Udasina vadasinam asaktam teshu karmasu. So then Krishna says that even though I perform so many such activities, but I am not bound by them because I am completely detached. I am indifferent. I am situated like an indifferent party, unattached to their activities. Therefore, I am not bound by any of those activities. Maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunanena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. He says that मया अध्यक्षेण बाय माय डायरेक्शन प्रकृति सूयते सचराचरम प्रकृति गिव्स राइज टू द मूविंग एंड नॉन मूविंग लिविंग एंटिटीज आर इट मैनिफेस्ट द बॉडीज ऑफ द मूविंग एंड नॉन मूविंग लिविंग एंटिटीज बाय दिस कॉज द यूनिवर्स अपियर्स अगेन एंड अगेन. सो अल्टीमेटली दिस होल मेटीरियल मैनिफेस्टेशन हैपन्स इज ऑर्केस्ट्रेटेड बाय इज कैरिड आउट बाय प्रकृति बट अंडर माई डायरेक्शन. Under my direction, everything happens. Then he says, but avajananti mam mudha manushin tanum ashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Two meanings are given to this particular verse here. Avajananti mam mudha, but foolish foolish people deride me. Manushim tanum ashritam. When I, Krishna, when I appear in my two-handed human form, people deride me by thinking that I am an avatara of this Purusha avatar. I am an avatara of Karanodaka Sai Vishnu or Shirodaka Sai Vishnu. Parambhava majananto. They do not know that I am Sarvakarana Karanam. ईश्वर परम कृष्ण सच्चिदानंद विग्रह अनादिर आदिर गोविंद सर्व कारण कारणम. दे डू नॉट अंडरस्टैंड दैट आई एम द सोर्स ऑफ ऑल दीज पुरुषावतारास. इनफैक्ट इवन द ग्रेटेस्ट ऑफ द पुरुषावतार विष्णुर महान सैह यस्य कला विशेषो. द महाविष्णु ऑल्सो इज एन एक्सपेंशन ऑफ मई एक्सपेंशन. दे डू नॉट नो मम परम भाव अजानंतो. दिस इज वन अंडरस्टैंडिंग. अनदर अंडरस्टैंडिंग इज when I appear in my two-handed form, people think that I am also an ordinary living entity having a material body. So they are foolish. This is another understanding. And then he says, what happens to that person who understands that when Krishna appears in his two-handed form, human-like form, he has a material body and he is just an ordinary person, maybe a little extraordinary, but person possessing material body only. If someone thinks like that, then what happens? Mogasha, moga karmano, moga jnana vichetasa, rakshasi masurim chaiva prakriti mohinim shrita. If a person thinks like that, then all his endeavors will be futile. If he is a karma yogi, aspiring for swarga and other such things, his endeavors for attaining perfection of karma yoga will be futile because he is unwilling to accept my form to be transcendental. If he is a jnana yogi aspiring for liberation, all his endeavor for attaining liberation will be futile because he is unwilling to accept my form to be transcendental. If he is a bhakti yogi aspiring for prema, all his aspirations for attaining prema will be futile because he is unwilling to accept my form to be transcendental. Mahatmanastu mam partha daivim prakriti mahashrita. Bhajanti ananya manaso gyatva bhutadim avyayam. But mahatmanas, but very fortunate souls who have become fortunate by coming in association with devotees and receiving the seed of devotion, such fortunate souls, daivim prakritim ashrita. The result of coming in touch with fortunate souls is that one develops faith in the worship of Krishna. That is called as daivim prakritim. One attains divine nature. Divine nature means what? Vishnu Bhakta Smrito Daiva Asurastad Viparyaya. One who has faith in Vishnu Bhakti is Daiva. And Asura is one who is opposed to worshipping Krishna. Daivim Prakriti Mashrita Bhajanti Ananya Manaso. And such people worship me with pure devotional service without mixing it with Karma Jnana Yoga etc. Gyatva Bhutadim Avyayam with proper Sambandha Gyan, understanding that my two-handed form of Krishna is the cause of all causes and it is an indestructible form which is fully spiritual. Okay? And understanding this, what is the meaning of Bhajanti Ananya Manaso? Worshipping the human form with no distraction. What does that word Bhajanti indicate? He says, सततं कीर्तयन्तो मां यतन्तश्च दृढव्रता नमस्यन्तश्च मां भक्त्या नित्ययुक्ता उपासते. He says, सततम् दे वर्शिप मी, सततम् माम उपासते, दे वर्शिप मी एट ऑल टाइम्स. सो वी सॉ दैट सततम् डस नॉट इंडिकेट एवरी मोमेंट. इट्स नॉट दैट एट एवरी मोमेंट दे आर एंगेज इन सम फॉर्म ऑफ वर्शिप. इट मीन्स थ्रू आउट द डे कंसिस्टेंटली देयर फेथ इज एंगेज इन वर्शिपिंग द लॉर्ड. Their goal of prema is continuous. Their willingness to engage continuously is continuous. Their faith in pure devotional service is continuous. Even though, as sadhakas, their engagement may be discontinuous. Okay? Even in discontinuous engagement, there is consistency in goal, consistency in their willingness to engage continuously, and there is consistency in their faith or continuity in their faith. That is the meaning of satatam. Satatam mam upasate bhaktya. They worship me at all times with bhakti. And what is the form of that bhakti? Kirtayantaha. They may sing about me. Dridavrataha. They may take very strict vows of chanting so many rounds and like that. Nityayukta. Why do they engage in these activities? Because they desire to establish a relationship with me. That is their desire. And for that, yatantaha. And in order to attain that, in order to get inspiration for that constant engagement, they roam around searching for like-minded devotees association. Namasyantascha mam bhaktya. And whenever they get an opportunity, they offer obeisances to me and anything connected to me with great devotion. So this is the meaning of bhajantaha, bhajanti ananya manaso. But on the other hand, not everyone may worship in this way. There are others who may worship in very, very indirect ways. Jnana yajnena chapyanye yajanto mam upasate ekatvena prithakvena bahudha vishvato mukam. There are indirect ways in which people may worship Krishna, and this is mentioned as Ahangropasana, Pratikopasana, and Vishwarupa Upasana. Ahangropasana is, a kind of very indirect way of worshipping the Lord, where one considers oneself non-different from the deity which they are worshipping. Pratikopasana is considering the various demigod forms to be, belonging to the various limbs of the universal form, and therefore worshipping those various demigod forms as forms of the Supreme Lord or representative forms of the Supreme Lord. This is also a very indirect way. This is not recommended. And Vishwarupa Upasana is worshipping worshipping the totality of the vibhutis, totality of the material manifestation, thinking Vishnu is everything. So this is Vishwarupa Upasana. These are kinds of very indirect ways of worshipping the Supreme Lord. This is not so recommended and this is not so effective, even if one may aspire for liberation. Okay. So Krishna says the topmost form of worship is pure devotional service, direct devotional service. So here the worship is direct, the goals are also pure goals. Anya vilashita shunyam jnana karma adhyana vrtam anukulyena Krishna anushilana. So this is pure. Then inferior than this is mixed devotional service. In mixed devotional service, the worship is direct. Okay? And the goals are impure. The goals may be impure. Okay. And then there is this Jnana Yajna worship, where the worship is indirect and the goals are also indirect. So, and the goals are also impure. So, at the most, one may get only Sayujya Mukti through this kind of worships. Okay. So this is jnana yajnena chapyanye yajantoma upasate, a very indirect form of worship which is actually not recommended. It's a very inferior form of worshipping the Supreme Lord. Okay. Then in the next few verses he explains how does one worship, this, what is this Vishwarupa Upasana? Bahuda Vishwato Mukham, which was mentioned as one of the Jnana Yajna forms. He says, Aham Kratur Aham Yajna Swadaham Aham Aushadam Mantroham Aham Evajyam Aham Agnir Aham Putam Pitaham Masya Jagato Mata Data Pitamaha Vedyam Pavitram Omkara Riksama Yajurevacha Gatirbhatta Prabhushakshi Nivasam Sharanam Shurit Prabhava Pralayasthanam Nidhanam Bijamavyayam Tapamyaham Aham Varsham Nigrinami Utsrajami Cha Amrutam Chaiva Mrityuscha Sadasachaham Arjuna. Like that, in these four verses, he describes that how whatever one sees that, oh, this is Krishna, this is Krishna. Like that, one understands the various vibhutis to be actually manifestations of the Supreme Lord. And, this is one form of Vishwarupa Upasana, which is not, I mean, of course, as devotees, we do identify that everything is at the energy of Krishna, and we try to utilize them. While these Vishwarupa Upasakas, they just understand that everything is a form of the Lord, and that's it. But what is the purpose of that? If everything is a form of the Lord, but devotees understand all of these things are energies of the Lord and are fit to be utilized in the service of the Lord. That is how the devotees think. And that's how they engage everything in the service of the Lord. Okay. So then we saw, but there are those people who are not engaged in either direct worship or indirect worship. Some people are outright interested only in karma for attaining some temporary benefit. Traividyamam somapa bhutapapa yajnairishtva swargatim prarthayante te punyam asadya surendra lokam ashnanti divyan divideva bhogan. It is mentioned that Traividya, the knowers of the three Vedas here refers to primarily the Karmakandya portion of the Vedas. Those who are interested only in the Karmakandya portion of the Vedas. Mamishtva, they improperly worship me through sacrifices, drinking soma, they become purified. And they pray for Swarga. Swargatim prarthayante. And by engaging in this Karmakandya activities, they punyam asadya, they accumulate lot of punya, and surendra lokam asadya, they attain the abode of Indra and enjoy there the celestial pleasures of the devatas, divi deva bogan. Tetam bhuktva swargalokam vishalam shine punye martyalokam vishanti. Te punyam asadya evam traidharma manuprapanna gatagatam kama kama labante. And having enjoyed the vast pleasures of Swarga there, when the punya gets over, shine punya martyalokam vishanti, they come back to the martyaloka, where they have to again perform the punya karma, gain the punya, and then go back again to the Swarga and then come back like that. In this way, they go and come back, go and come back, go and come back like that. So in this way, Krishna is contrasting the direct worship of the Supreme Lord through pure devotional service, through this indirect means of Jnana Yajna, and through this improper means of karma, like that. Okay, so I think this is where we ended our discussion. The last time we discussed, of course, we are meeting after the Kartik break. Long break. I apologize. I don't like to give breaks, but sometimes you necessarily have to, because Kartik is the time when everyone travels and and visits the Dham. So you do have to factor that in. Anyways, so We are going to continue our discussion now, but before we continue our discussion, if there are any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share, ask, add, we can take it up before we continue our discussion. Anything anyone would like to share, ask, add? Okay. Shri Vidya Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. I'm just going back to the verses 9, 11, and 13, Avachananti Mamuda and Mahatmanastu. Of course, in the one of the sessions, you described it very elaborately. But still, I just have a point of concern here. So, like, so Krishna, like in 9, 11, he has made it very clear that those who understand him to be the Lord of all lords, so they are actually his devotees. And when we say that, when he says, he calls them Mahatmas, and then he says that they come under Daivyam Prakriti, right? So which means even among the Vaishnava Sampradayas, there are a few Vaishnavas who do not accept, you know, 200 form of Krishna to be the supreme. So does it mean that they also don't come under this Daivi Prakriti?
No. That is only some specific.
Okay.
So these Mahatmas, even if one may accept the form of Krishna, they may accept the form of Krishna to be an incarnation of Lord Narayana.
Okay.
But if they consider the form of Krishna to be material,
okay,
then they don't come under Devi Prakriti.
Okay. So even if they consider it to be an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, they also come under this. They also are addressed here as Mahatmas, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's great. And so thank you very much, Prabhuji, for clarifying that point. And this 9:12, that Mokasho Moka Karmano, I think this also you have, you know, very nicely described, but still I just have a doubt. So, like, you know, it is said that, you know, all their this one, you know, or defeated, okay, whatever they try, everything become futile and it's all defeated. So, but so does it mean that even the karmis, like, who are aspiring for Svargaloka, so they should also understand Krishna's form to be eternal, transcendental only, then their endeavor to attain Svargaloka will be fruitful, I mean, will be successful?
Well, in one sense, they should not necessarily. If they want an eternal benefit, any eternal benefit, then, because even those who worship the demigods, they do get temporary benefits. So therefore, if anyone wants some tangible eternal benefits, then they should definitely accept the form of the Lord to be eternal. Otherwise, they may get some temporary benefits according to their karma. That's all.
Okay, so permanent, this one is like elevation from one level to another level, right? Or even from Karma Yoga to Jnana Yoga or this one. So one should accept Krishna's form to be transcendental. That's what it basically means, right?
Correct.
Okay, Prabhuji, thank you very much.
Right. Anything else before we move forward? Okay, if there is none, let's continue our discussion. So, we have some very interesting verses lined up today. Then Krishna continues. So, these people who are Karmakandis, if they want enjoyment, their enjoyment is taken care of by their pious activities. Punya karma, which is described in the Dharma Shastras. Whereas the devotees give up all these kinds of various activities of punya, which fall within the category of Varnashrama Dharma and all that. So if they have given up all that, how can the devotees get enjoyment? How will the devotees get enjoyment if they have given up? Because for ordinary people, the source of their enjoyment is their piety, right? But the devotees have given up all kinds of pious activities. Okay, the so-called Karmakandiya pious activities. So how will they enjoy? Will they not get any enjoyment? Krishna says, अनन्याश्चिन्तयन्तो माम् ये जना पर्युपासते तेषां नित्याभियुक्तानां योगक्षेमं वहाम्यहम्। योगक्षेमं वहामि अहम्। अहम् वहामि, ऐ कैरी द बर्डन। योगक्षेमं ऑफ सप्लाई एंड मेंटेनेंस फॉर ऑर्डिनरी पीपल, देयर सप्लाई एंड मेंटेनेंस इज टेकन केयर ऑफ बाय देयर ओन पुण्य कर्मा। बट फॉर माई डिवोटीज हु हैव गिवन अप ऑल काइंड्स ऑफ पुण्य कर्मा, डू यू थिंक आई विल लेट देम सफर? नो, आई टेक पर्सनल रिस्पॉन्सिबिलिटी फॉर टेकिंग केयर ऑफ देयर सप्लाई एंड मेंटेनेंस। योग क्षेमं वहामि अहम्। आई कैरी द बर्डन ऑफ सप्लाई एंड मेंटेनेंस ऑफ हूम, तेषां ऑफ दोज पीपल नित्य अभियुक्तानाम, दोज हु डिजायर कॉन्स्टेंट एसोसिएशन विथ मी, दोज पर्सनैलिटीज फॉर हूम द गोल ऑफ देयर लाइफ इज टू कॉन्स्टेंटली बिकम माई एसोसिएट, फॉर दोज पीपल तेषां योगक्षेमं वहामि अहम्। आई कैरी द बर्डन ऑफ सप्लाई एंड मेंटेनेंस, आई डोंट लीव इट टू द एजेंसी ऑफ कर्मा। A devotee's happiness and suffering is not due to their karma. A devotee's happiness and suffering is taken care of by Krishna. A devotee's happiness is due to his proper engagement in proper engagement in devotional service. This manifests in the form of Kleshagni and Shubhada, destruction of suffering and bestowal of auspiciousness. That is not due to karma. A devotee's happiness is not due to karma, bestowed by Krishna. And similarly, his suffering may be or is also orchestrated by Krishna to pull the devotee closer to Krishna's lotus feet. Or sometimes the suffering is due to their committing some offenses. But it is not due to bad karma. Okay. Tesham nitya abhiyuktanam. For those who desire constant association with me, yoga kshemam vahami aham. I carry the burden of their supply and maintenance. And ये जनाः एंड दीज पर्सनैलिटीज अनन्यास चिंतयंतो माम, दे थिंक ओनली ऑफ मी। अनन्याः मीन्स दे थिंक ओनली ऑफ कृष्णा, नॉट डेमी गॉड्स एंड नॉट थ्रू कर्मा ज्ञान योगा एक्सेट्रा, ओनली थ्रू ज्ञान कर्मादि अनावृत शुद्ध भक्ति। परि उपासते ऑल्सो मीन्स दे वर्शिप ओनली कृष्णा थ्रू द प्रोसेस ऑफ भक्ति, बट दे डोंट मिक्स इट विथ कर्म ज्ञान योगा एंड दे डोंट वर्शिप द डेमी गॉड्स। ओके, सो टू दोस पीपल हु आर अन्याभिलाषिता शून्यम ज्ञान कर्मादि अनावृतम आनुकूल्येन कृष्णानुशीलनम, दोस हु प्रैक्टिस दिस पाथ, Krishna says, Yoga Kshemam Vahami Aham. Because they are choosing not to depend on Karma Jnana Yoga. But if someone says, no, no, I will do bhakti also, along with that I will do karma also, then Krishna says, I will allow karma to take care of you. If you depend on me, I will take care of you. If you want to supplement that surrender with some dependence on karma jnana yoga, I will allow them to take care of you. Okay, your surrender to me should be complete. Your complete surrender may be weak surrender, but it cannot be mixed surrender. Okay, if your surrender is weak, I will make it strong. If your surrender is mixed, I will let go of you. Because you are not willing to surrender to me completely. You are not convinced. If you are not convinced, I will not force you. I will take care of you through the agency of karma, which means you will get what you karmically deserve. That's it. But if you surrender to me completely, even though the strength of that surrender may be weak, still I will take care of you. This is Krishna's promise. Okay? That's why he uses the word ananyaha and pari upasate. The prefix pari and ananyaha, they indicate that the worship should be pure. It should not be mixed with jnana, karma, yoga, etc. Like that. And it should be anyabhilashita shunyam. One should have no other goal other than the goal to establish a relationship with Krishna. That is indicated by nityabhiyuktanam. So, nityabhiyuktanam indicates anyabhilashita shunyam. Okay. And ananyas chintayantomam and paryupasate indicates jnana karmadi anavritam. And if one practices like that, what Krishna says? Yoga kshemam vahami aham. Tesham yoga kshemam vahami aham. I carry the burden of their supply and maintenance. This is Krishna's promise. Srila Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur commenting on this, he says, on the other hand, the happiness of my Ananya Bhaktas is given by me. It is not obtained by pious acts. It is not obtained by pious acts. It is given by me. They are at all times well-versed in matters concerning me and are always ignorant of all other things. They don't know much about karma, jnana, yoga, etc. They are not interested also. And they are interested only in the subject matter concerning Krishna. Or the phrase can mean that they constantly desire to be in my association. For such persons, I take care of their attainment of wealth and their maintenance, even though they do not expect such things. They are not expecting me to take care of them, but I take care of them. So here he says, it would be unsuitable for the Lord simply to say that he performs these acts. You know, I perform these acts. Thus the word vahami meaning carry is used. No, carry, vahami, karomi. He doesn't say, karomi means I perform. Vahami means I carry. What is the meaning of, why doesn't he say karomi instead of vahami? What is the impact of this word vahami here? Srila Vishwanatha Chakra Thakur says, the use of the word vahami indicates that the Lord bears the burden of maintaining their bodies in the manner that the householder takes the responsibility for maintaining his own wife and children. The householder feels obliged. The householder wants to maintain his wife and children. The householder would consider it as an insult if someone else volunteers to take care of his wife and children. Even though the householder may be struggling to earn his money, if someone volunteers, I will take care of your wife and children, he will feel insulted. Because he feels personally responsible for their maintenance out of affection. Similarly, the Lord feels personally responsible. That is why the devotees are called Krishna's Swajana. Because he considers them, oh, these are my people. These are my people and it is my responsibility to take care of them. That's how Krishna feels. Thus, one should not say that, like others, their attainment or preservation of bodily needs is due to karma. A devotee's neither his suffering is due to karma, nor is his enjoyment due to karma. Everything is orchestrated by Krishna. still, since someone may still argue, but Krishna, you are Atma Rama. You are enjoying within and indifferent to all things as a Supreme Lord. Where is the question of you bearing this responsibility? Are you not Atma Rama? Atma Ramam Purna Kamam Nijalabena Nityada. It is mentioned. The Lord is Atma Rama, completely self-satisfied. Why would the self-satisfied Lord bearing the responsibility of taking care of his devotees? Why would he do it? Okay, this question arises. The Shruti says, Bhaktir asya bhajanam tad iha amutropadi upadi nairasyena amushmin manah kalpanam etat eva naishkarmyam. Bhakti is worship of the Lord, concentrating the mind on him, renouncing all material desires for enjoyment in this world and the next. It destroys all karmas. So, like that. Because my ananya devotee has no karma due to lack of desire, his happiness is given by me. Because my ananya devotee has no karma due to lack of desire, his happiness is given by me. And even though I am indifferent to all else, I have great affection for my devotee. This is the cause. Yes, I am indifferent to everything else, but I have great affection for my devotee. Now the question again, okay, we will just complete this purport and then I will touch this point. One should also not say that in giving the burden of their maintenance to their worshipable Lord, the devotees show lack of prema. So someone may say, how can I expect the Lord to, you devotees, you don't love Krishna, because otherwise, if you really loved Krishna, how would you hand over the burden of your maintenance to him? Okay. So Krishna says, Krishna defends the devotees. He says, don't speak like that about my devotees. They do not give me that burden. Rather, I, by my own will, I accept it. They don't give it. I accept it by my own will. It should also be understood that I am not bearing it as a duty. I am not bearing it as a duty in the manner that I create and maintain the universe by my will alone. Rather, being attached to my devotees, I take the greatest pleasure in taking care of their needs, like carrying the weight of one's lover. It is my greatest pleasure. I take great pleasure. Please don't try to steal that pleasure of mine. It is my pleasure. I take great pleasure in taking care of my devotees. So now again this question arises. If Krishna, we have of course discussed this in other forums. If Krishna is Atma Rama, the scriptures say that that Krishna is Atma Ram, he is self-satisfied. And at the same time, the scriptures also say, Bhaktya Tutosha Bhagavan Gajayutapal. The Lord is satisfied by bhakti. So now, the question arises, of the two, which is right? Is the Lord, if the Lord is self-satisfied, then he cannot be satisfied by bhakti. If he is satisfied by bhakti, then he cannot be self-satisfied. He cannot be called as self-satisfied. So how can you call the Lord self-satisfied and at the same time say he is very pleased with the bhakti of the disciple, of his devotees? This question arises. So Srila Jiva Goswami, in his Bhakti Sandarbha, he addresses this point. He says, what is bhakti? So he says, bhakti is the Swarup Shakti of the Supreme Lord. Bhakti is it is a part of Krishna's Swarupa. Krishna's Swarupa Shakti transforms into bhakti. So therefore, bhakti is inherent to Krishna. It is not inherent to Jiva. So Jiva is Jiva Shakti. He is Tatastha. Bhakti is Antaranga Shakti. So Tatastha Shakti is, you know, the Antaranga Shakti can interact with Tatastha Shakti. But Antaranga Shakti is different energy. Tatastha Shakti is different energy. Okay. So, Bhakti is a transformation of Krishna's Antaranga Shakti. So, therefore, for Krishna, when Krishna says Bhaktya Tutosha, it means Krishna is satisfied by his own self, because Bhakti is a part of his own Swarupa. So, therefore, if Krishna is pleased with bhakti or a devotee, he is pleased with the devotion in the devotee. So that pleasure is caused due to bhakti, which is a part of his swarupa only. So therefore, where is the question of that challenging his Atmaram nature? Atmarama is self-satisfied. Bhakti is a part of Krishna's self. So if Krishna is pleased or satisfied with bhakti, that does not challenge his Atmaram nature. So the example that is given is a flute player may blow his life air into the flute and even though he breathes on a regular basis every day at every minute, but when he blows that same air into the flute, that flute converts that air into pleasant music and the flute player becomes very pleased with that pleasant music. But in one sense, he is pleased actually. That pleasant music is a transformation of his own air which is coming from his mouth. The flute just transforms it into pleasant music. But without that air, the flute in itself cannot produce that music. Okay. So the flute is like the jiva. The air is like bhakti. The flute player is Krishna. The air is coming from the flute player, that is Krishna, or bhakti is coming from Krishna, and and the flute is the jiva. When that air interacts with the flute, it produces music which gives great pleasure to the flute player. Similarly, when Krishna's Antaranga Shakti interacts with the Jiva in the form of, then it produces bhakti, and that bhakti gives great pleasure to Krishna. So therefore, there is nothing wrong in this whole thing, because it is, So Krishna being pleased with bhakti does not challenge the Atmaram nature of Krishna. So that is what this verse is indicating. Anyways, so any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share as add in this context, in the context of this verse, whatever we have discussed. Any quick questions, discussion points? Yes, Shiva Kumar Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu Tandav. Prabhu, the Jnana Karmadi Anavritam Prabhu, Karma Yoga is understandable in terms of material benefits of demigod worship. When we say Jnana Anavritam, does it mean the thought of oneness with the Lord or the goal of liberation, Prabhu?
Both.
Both.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, oneness, Qualitative oneness is real. Of
Mm-hmm.
course, qualitative oneness is qualitative similarity. The jiva is not qualitatively one with Krishna, because the jiva has only 50 qualities. Krishna has 64 qualities. So therefore, how can the one possessing only 50 qualities in minute quantity, how can he be qualitatively same? So this example of one drop of ocean water and ocean and one small piece of gold with a golden mountain, this is not a complete explanation of the jiva and Krishna. So whenever there is qualitative oneness indicated, actually it is qualitative similarity, and there is no qualitative oneness actually. So therefore, but anyways, in the when we say jnana, on the path of jnana, they overemphasize on this qualitative oneness. But devotees accept qualitative oneness. You know, it's not that they debate it, but they don't over focus on that, because over focusing on that can potentially decrease their service attitude. They would rather focus on the quantitative difference. How Krishna is Brihat, they would focus on that, and they would focus on those exclusive 14 qualities which only Krishna only possesses, which will convince the devotee to surrender to Krishna and worship him. So while we do accept that we possess 50 qualities in common, but as devotees we focus on those 14 qualities which we don't have. But the jnanis may focus on the 50 qualities which they share. Okay. So it is a question of, there is no, it's not a different sambandha jnan, but the difference is in the focus. Like that.
Okay. So Prabhu, one more question, Prabhu. Now, you discussed that Krishna takes care of the devotees, and the suffering and the happiness is from Krishna's hand and not from karma. So I just wanted to understand, Prabhu, especially in ISKCON, the devotees come from a very diverse background, right, Prabhu? Like somebody might have been born in a multi-generation Vaishnava families. Somebody might be coming from absolutely no exposure to Vaishnavism. And somebody coming from a heavily materialistic background, things like that, Prabhu. So given this diverse, heavy diverse background, when Krishna takes over the devotee's maintenance or life, is there any way, I mean, from Krishna's point of view, I'm sure he would know, but is there any way that from devotee can appreciate that aspect that the Krishna has taken over the control, is something that's very difficult to kind of understand or digest from my personal experience itself.
Okay. My question to you,
hmm.
your maintenance is taken care by karma. Is that very easy to understand for you?
Yes, Prabhu. Yes.
How?
In the sense that I am bound to the results of my own actions of the past, whether it's good or bad.
How do you know there is a system which is taking care of that?
I go by faith only. Prabhu. The Shastra says that.
Okay. So which means the law of karma is not pratyaksha praman for you. It is shabda praman only for you, na?
True.
So then, when you are willing to accept law of karma based on shabda praman, why you are asking pratyaksha praman to believe that Krishna is taking care of you? Krishna's hands is invisible. Law of karma is invisible. If you are willing to accept law of karma according to shabda praman, why should it be difficult for you to accept the hands of Krishna based on the same shabda praman?
Okay.
The problem is, sometimes this is the nature of human thought process. This is so widespread. Someone actually, if we constantly hear something a few times, even though it is Shabda Praman, we start believing it as if it is Pratyaksha Praman for us. But what we have done, we have heard it a few times, that's all. In the material world also, it is the same thing. So, you say that, Prabhuji, my telephone got discharged. So now, I ask, you know, how do you know your telephone got discharged? You show me your telephone and you say, look, Prabhu, you know, the battery sign is actually completely empty. And it says 2%. Okay. That says 2%. But how do you know that means your battery is discharged? Then you may say, Prabhu, isn't it obvious? You see it very clearly. It says 2% battery. It means battery is discharged. I said, Prabhu, have you ever opened your phone and even bothered to find out if there is a battery inside? How do you know battery is discharged? Because the first time someone handed you over the phone, when they were teaching you, the operations manual said, how do you identify when the battery is discharged? How many of you, you know, have opened your smartphones and even bothered to see if there is a battery inside? Or how do you even know if that is the battery? Unless you have manufactured it. Maybe, you know, someone told you first, okay, this rectangular shaped thing is a battery. So that is also Shabda Praman only. But when two, three people repeat the same thing, that we start believing the Shabda Praman as if it is Pratyaksha Praman. Practically every single thing, 99.99% of the things in this world that we believe based on modern science, it's all outright faith, Shabda Praman, which we believe as if it is Pratyaksha Praman. That's all. Right? So similarly, and we carry over this even in our scriptural understanding. Few things in the beginning we hear, after few times it becomes, we start believing as if it is Pratyaksha Praman only for us. You know, the someone like few days back, Kesho Priyamandaji was asking, you know, one body, two souls. Prabhuji, it makes no logical sense to me that how can one body, two souls exist. Like that. I said, but how do you know that even in one body, one soul exists? Have you seen the soul? No. How do you know? The Shastras say. So now the same Shastra is telling that in some cases, in one body, two souls can exist. So when in the first case, you never asked for logic. Now you are asking for logic. So there should be some consistency. So, when the Dharma Shastras say that there is something like law of karma, you know, you do good, you get good. You do bad, you get bad. There is a system. Right? So you said, okay, fine, thank you. But when you, two, three, four times you hear it, the fifth time, automatically, you start speaking about it as if, you know, it is so obvious. Nothing is obvious. It's just that it was repeated sufficient number of times that it makes you feel that it is very obvious for you. So oftentimes when devotees are told that your yoga kshema is taken care of by Krishna, they say, Prabhuji, it makes no logical sense to me. So where is the logic involved? So till now, who was taking care? They say karma. Have you seen karma? On what basis do you believe karma? Then they scratch their head. They say, oh, we believe in karma based on Shastras only. Right? Now the same Shastra is telling, when you take up a devotional service, Krishna is taking care. Why should it be difficult for you to believe? Like that.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Hi.
Anything else anyone would like to share as add? Any quick discussion points, questions? Okay, Shyam Mukund Prabhu.
हरे कृष्ण प्रभुजी, दंडवत प्रणाम। एंड प्रभुजी, रिगार्डिंग दिस दैट प्रत्यक्ष प्रमाण ऑफ लॉ ऑफ कर्म एंड कृष्णा टेकिंग केयर, कृष्णा टेकिंग चार्ज, सो इट इज आल्सो दैट व्हेन वी थिंक दैट सम मिरेकल शुड हैपन नाउ, अदरवाइज पीपल थिंक दैट इट इज ओनली लॉ ऑफ कर्मा। सो आई थिंक दैट देयर आल्सो द वन थिंग्स दैट इट इज ओनली लॉ ऑफ कर्मा वर्किंग। सो बट कृष्णाज
Yeah,
वे
that could be the case. Yeah, they feel that, oh, if Krishna is doing, then there should be some miracle which happens, you know, and it is, you know, sort of natural. Like, say, people may say, look, Prabhuji, okay, I accept both are law, both are based on Shabda Praman only, I agree. But the thing is, look, before I came to Krishna consciousness, you see, I had this chronic bronchitis. Now that after having come to Krishna consciousness, I still have the same chronic bronchitis. You know, I had 6 fingers in my left hand. After coming to Krishna consciousness, I still have those 6 fingers in my left hand. Right? I had a polio attacked right leg. After coming to Krishna consciousness, still I have the polio attacked right leg. If Krishna has taken over, none of what I had, which was due to karma. So before I came to Krishna consciousness, my life was controlled by karma. Yes. Now that I have come to Krishna consciousness, Krishna has taken over. Yes. Still, why do I have the 6th finger in my left hand? Why is my right leg polio attacked? Why do I still have chronic bronchitis? Nothing has changed. Everything looks the same. I go in front of the mirror. I look the very same. I go to my home. I have the same father, same mother, same sister, same wife, same husband, everything. Nothing has changed. And now you say Krishna has taken over. How am I to understand this? You know, I often give this example, right? So, you know, and I will give the reason why also it happens like that. So if, let's say, if someone is trying to sell their car, okay, red colored Innova or silver colored Innova. They want to sell their silver colored Innova car. Okay. So, and their neighbor is looking to purchase a second hand car. And they like that silver colored Innova car. So, they said, okay, I will purchase it from you. And they decide that, and probably they share the same parking space also. Okay. So, one day, one fine day, they go to the registration office. Then they get it registered, change. And from today, it is no longer your silver-colored Innova car. It is your neighbor's silver-colored Innova car. So, now the neighbor may decide, well, I like the silver color. The steering is good. The tire is good. The seat is good. Now, I don't wish to change anything. I will use it as it is. Okay.
Yes.
Then the neighbor may think like that and may use it as it is. Sometimes he may think, well, everything is good, but I don't like the seat color. I will change the seat covers. Or he may think, everything is good, but I don't like the color of the car. I will change it from silver color to white color. He may change. Okay. Sometimes he may retain, sometimes he may change. It is up to him. But it may be standing in the same parking space also. But unless you open the glove box and check the papers, you will not know that the ownership has changed from person A to person B. The same number plate, the same color, same parking space, everything is same, but the ownership has changed. Right? So you have to look at the papers to see whose ownership it is. Similarly, Krishna, when he takes over a person, It is not that suddenly he does some magic and some wholesale changes happen. He wakes up, you know, till yesterday, you know, he was a male and today he becomes a female. Or till yesterday, you know, he had a polio attack leg, today he has a perfectly fine leg. That kind of things he will never do. Because if he does something like that, then it will challenge the authenticity. It will shake their faith in the other systems like you know, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. Those who are practicing that, they will completely lose faith in all of that. And without any bhakti, they will just start following the external aspects of bhakti. And it will not work for them because they don't have bhakti. They are only following the external limbs of bhakti. So then what will happen? They will lose faith in the path of Karma Jnana Yoga also, and they will lose faith in bhakti also. Okay. So therefore, Krishna does not keep, he does not make it so obvious that, you know, externally it will be so evident that suddenly, oh, everything has changed. It will not change like that. Krishna will gradually do it.
Yes, yes, Prabhu. Thank you.
Anything else before we move forward? Yeah, gradually there may be change in behavior and attitude. That is gradual. That may happen. Yeah. Gradually anarthana vritti happens. But yeah, it's not very sudden. Okay. Any other final discussion points, comments, questions before we move forward? Okay. If there is none, let's move forward. So this is Krishna, who personally is willing to take responsibility of his devotees. So now, what about the demigod worshippers? Krishna says, Yepyanya devata bhakta yajante shraddayan vitaha. Tepi mameva kunteya yajanti avidipurvakam. So he says that ye api anya devata bhakta, but those who are devoted to the other demigods yajante shraddayan vitaha and worship them with faith, te api, they also mam eva, me only yajanti, they also worship me only avidipurvakam, but by the wrong method, O son of Kunti, they are worshipping me by the wrong method. Huh? So how they are worshipping me? Because ultimately I only empower. I am only empowering all the demigods. They do not function independent of my power. So in that sense, you know, you know, in that sense, they are worshipping me because they are my empowered representatives. So, worshipping them is indirectly worshipping me only, but it is not the right way of worshipping me, because the right way of worshipping me is to worship me directly and not indirectly through these demigods. That is not the right way of worshipping me. Yajante avidhi purvakam. Tepi mameva konteya yajante avidhi purvakam. So in verse 15, you have mentioned the three types of worship, you know, Jnana Yajnana Chapyanni. And then to explain the third type of worship, Vishwarupa, you have recited verses to illustrate it in 16 to 19. Some others worship Indra and others as a part of their practice in Karma Yoga, verse 20. Even though they predominantly worship other devatas, they are also your devotees. But then why do they not get liberation if they are your devotees? Rather, you said they again take repeated birth and then men of small intelligence worship the demigods and their fruits are limited and temporary. You mentioned in 7.23. So this verse answers. If they api mameva konteya, if worshippers of demigods are also worshipping you, O Krishna, then why don't they get liberation? Why you say that they take repeated birth and death and they get only temporary benefits? Why do you say like that? So here Krishna says, because te mameva yajanti. They also worship me, no doubt. However, aviti purvakam. They worship without any rules for attaining me. So if someone takes a pin, a safety pin or a needle, and he pricks the father and says, I am trying to serve you, the father will give a tight slap, because that is not the way of serving the father, right? So thus they return to this world, because this is, they are not following the rules for attaining me. Yanti deva brata devan pitran yanti pitru brata bhutani yanti bhutejya yanti madhyajinopi mam. You have to worship me through the process of bhakti. If you are worshipping the demigods and hoping that you will come to me, that is ridiculous. That it doesn't happen like that. So then Krishna says, aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhureva cha natumam abhijananti tatve natascha vantite. So in the yajna they may say Indraya swaha, Varunaya swaha and all that. But even in performing that, one should know, aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhureva cha. I am only the bhokta, enjoyer and prabhu, master of all sacrifices. Natu mam abhijananti, those who do not know me, tatvenatas chavantite, in truth they fall down. I am the enjoyer and master of all the sacrifices. Those who do not know me, in truth they fall down. And these people, they think Indra is an independent enjoyer of the sacrifice, Varuna is an independent enjoyer of the sacrifice. With this kind of an understanding, if they worship Indra and Aruna, in Varuna, they definitely fall down. So this verse expands on the phrase Abhidhi Purvakam. Why is it Abhidhi Purvakam? Because Aham hi sarva yajnanam bhokta cha prabhureva cha. I am the enjoyer and master of all the sacrifices. Because they don't know this and they worship the demigods independently, therefore they fall down. I am the only enjoyer of the fruits, and I am the only master and the only giver of fruits through the forms of these devatas. But they do not know this about me factually. For instance, such persons think, oh, I am a worshipper of the sun. May the sun be pleased with me and give me my desired results. The sun is the supreme lord, not Narayana. He gives me faith to worship him and he gives the results of my worship. So a demigod worshipper thinks like this. Okay. Thus, lacking true knowledge about me, they return to this world. Because they don't know the proper knowledge about Krishna, they return to this world. Okay. See, complete knowledge leads to prema. Incomplete knowledge may lead in liberation. Improper knowledge will lead to staying in this material world. Okay. So, but those who worship me as the form of the universe, understanding that they are worshipping Narayana, Supreme Lord, through the form of the sun, they attain liberation. Okay. This is Vishwarupa Upasana. Okay. This is still okay. This is indirect worship. But demigod worship is improper worship. Okay. It is thus indicated here that one must worship the Lord's vibhutis such as the sun while understanding that they are vibhutis of the Lord. So if you accept that they are the vibhutis of the Lord, then it's okay. But if you think of the sun as being independent of Lord Narayana, then that kind of a worship becomes improper worship, avidhi purvakam worship. And such a kind of worship actually leads to returning back to this material world. Okay. So then he continues. Yanti deva vrata devan pitrunyanti pitruvrataha bhutani yanti bhutejya yanti madhyajino pimam. Yanti deva vrata devan. The worshippers of the devatas goes to the devatas. Pitrun yanti pitruvrataha. And the worshippers of the pitrus, they go to the pitrus. Bhutani yanti bhuta ijya. The worshippers of the ghosts go to the ghosts. Yanti madhyajinopi mam. And worshippers of me, they come to me. So then, but someone may say, look, if you say this is avidhi purvakam, this is not according to the vidhi, but they are seen to be referring to some Vedic scriptures only. Okay. They refer to some Vedic scriptures and they are worshipping. So how can you say that they are actually, how can you say that they are doing wrong? So they may say, but they are just worshipping those particular devatas according to the rules established in the books describing the methods of worshipping those devatas. They are worshipping according to that. What is wrong with that? The Vaishnavas worship Vishnu according to what is stated in the books dedicated to Vishnu worship. What is wrong if those worshippers follow the instructions of those books? Right? So, the other books which discuss about demigods, they follow those manuals and they worship the demigods. So, what is wrong? Is there anything wrong? This question arises. So, in response, he says, yes, that is true. But the rule is this, the devotees of those particular devatas will attain only those particular devatas. But don't say, okay, you can follow, worship the devatas according to those books which glorify the devatas and give talk about worshipping those devatas. You can worship them according to those injunctions. But the principle is that you will go only to their abode. And because the devatas are destructible, how can the worshippers of those devatas become indestructible? Does it make any sense? The devatas themselves are ordinary living entities. Maybe little extraordinary living entities. But living entities nevertheless. Okay. Their body is not eternal. Their abode is not eternal. Right. But it is understood that my devotees are eternal. They are imperishable. Just as I am eternal and imperishable, my devotees are also eternal and imperishable. Both Shruti and Smriti confirm the eternal nature of both the Lord and the devotee. Bhagavatam says, Bhavan ekah shishyate shesha samgyaha. At that time, you alone remain and you are known as Ananta. At that time means at the time of dissolution. Eko Narayana evasir na Brahma na cha Shankaraha. Narayana alone existed, nor Brahma nor Shiva. This is Maha Upanishad. Parardante so abudyata goparupome purastad avirbhavu, says Gopal Thapani Upanishad. At the end of Brahma's night, he arose from Yoga Nidra and appeared before me as before in the form of a cowherd boy. Further, Skanda Puran says, Na chavante cha madbhakta mahati pralayepi. My devotees are not destroyed even at the time of pralaya. Which means, they are not destroyed and they don't take birth again. Which means, they are not destroyed according to their karma. Okay. And they don't take birth again according to their karma. They are giving up their body and they are taking birth again in this material world. Both are orchestrated by Krishna. It is not orchestrated according to karma. Okay. Like that. So in this way, he contrasts worship of Krishna with worship of the demigods, like that. Any quick discussion points, comments, questions, anything anyone would like to share, ask, add on this theme? Yes, Tanna Mataji.
Hare Krishna, Dona Pram Ji. Prabhuji, I just wanted to know about this. Just now you said about the devtas and Krishna, that you go in the Krishna's abode, you don't come back. So, is there some timeline when you go to some other Indra or Brahma's abode? There is a timeline you stay for that, or you come back immediately? I just wanted to know.
Shine Punya Martilokam Vishanti. So, you go there on the strength of your karma. Once that punya gets exhausted, you come back.
Okay. So in Krishna, the abode is permanent, and this is according to the karma it is.
Yeah. Even if they have some extraordinary karma, but still, the abode of Swarga will exist only till the night of Brahma. At the night of Brahma, all the planetary systems till Swarga are destroyed. There is no demigod there. There is no demigod's abode also there. The demigod's lifespan itself is, only till the night of Brahma. Actually, it is not even till the night of Brahma. The demigod's lifespan is only one manvantara. The demigods themselves change 14 times during the day of Brahma. So the demigod's day lifespan is only 1/14 the 12 hours of Brahma, which means 12 by 14, 6/7 of an hour, 6/7 of an hour of Brahma is the lifespan of a demigod, and you are worshipping such a demigod. So at the most, you may go to his abode and stay for that long as the demigod is there. So when the person whom you have worshipped, he himself is not there, then where you will go?
Thank you, Guru. Thank you.
Right. Anything else before we move forward? If there is something in the chat box, let's take. The Purva Paksha, which Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur puts first and then again explains the answer. This is very nice. Many questions which will come in mind of the jiva is clarified. Yeah. This is how the acharyas do, they present the Purva Paksha. Sometimes they present Purva Pakshas which we don't even think, You have to be really thoughtful to even think about such Purva Pakshas. They will present such kind of Purva Pakshas like that. So, yeah. This is true. Next question. Wherever my devotees is mentioned, is it referring to pure devotees? Yeah, pure devotees means pure practitioners also, like the sadhakas. Their faith is pure, their practice is pure. Even though their swabhava may be impure, but their practice is pure. Like that. Okay. Okay, someone is asking, what exactly is Purva Paksha? Purva Paksha is the argument of the opponents of bhakti, So, someone who may not accept this argument, they may give some alternative arguments. That is Purva Paksha. Yes, Sri Vidya Mataji.
Prabhupada just wanted to know, Pitru, those who worship Pitru, so what does this actually mean? That the Shraddha that they do, system, or what is it actually? Pitru Lok.
Mataji, your voice is not clear. Are you not speaking close to the mic or previously when you spoke to us?
And I just wanted to know, this Pitru Nyantri Pitruvita, this. What
is
the Pitru, worship of Pitru actually
means? How do you actually worship the Pitrus like that?
Because like normally the devotees also do Shraddha every year, so does it refer to that or is it something else?
Yeah, performing this Shraddha, it all falls within the category of karma. Devotees need not do this kind of Shraddha. the best. So that kind of worship is, yeah, it is a form of Pitru worship. You know, you offer the Pindadan and all those things. So that is a kind of Pitru worship. But one need not engage in that kind of worship, because that is not, devotees need not do that. The devotees express their gratitude to their Pitrus by diligently engaging in Krishna's service. So at the most, they may offer some bhoga, mahaprasad, to the Pitrus. That also is not needed actually. The mere engagement in Krishna's service in bhakti very diligently actually is good enough. You know, that is the best thing that we can do for our Pitrus. So there is no specific shraddha that is needed. Of course, sometimes if you don't do that shraddha, the family members may get very, very disturbed if you are coming from such a family. So just to keep them pacified, you may choose to do that shraddha. But we do understand that the best expression of gratitude for our forefathers is our diligent practice of devotional service. Nothing else is needed.
Yeah, so that's what I just want to understand. So that the Pitru worship means that doing that the shraddha means there is a special category of people who worship only Pitru, like just as
maybe I'm not very sure. Maybe there are some people. I am not aware of all kinds of worshippers. Maybe there may be some those who exclusively worship the Pitrus, the forefathers, like that. Okay. Okay, there is a question in the chat box. What is Pitruloka? The ancestors are also individuals, so according to their karma, they may go to a particular planet. So what exactly is Pitruloka? Yeah, Pitruloka is a particular planetary system. I think it's present in one of the, what do you call this, lower planetary systems. This is described in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a geographical location mentioned also. So who goes to Pitruloka? Maybe the Dharma Shastras describe, you know, the conditions under which they go to Pitruloka. Pitruloka is it's some kind of, I mean, I'm not sure if it is exactly a kind of hell or heaven, and who goes there. These kind of details may be there in books like Garuda Puran, which describe, you know, according to what kind of pious or impious activities, who goes to Pitruloka, what do they experience there. Those things may be given there. I am not completely aware of these things. Yes, Mother Gail.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. I thought I might, I'm probably wrong, but I thought I understood you to say in some other class that, you know, demigods, they're not going to accept bhoga that was not like intended for Krishna, right?
Yeah, true.
And so I thought I understood you to say that the Pitrus also would not accept such bhoga.
Well, if the Pitrus are devotees, if the Pitrus are not devotees. Oh,
okay. That's what I needed to hear, because I was thinking, but if the Pitrus were not devotees, then why would they have that, you know, issue? So it depends upon whether they're devotees or not.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. That clarifies it up. Thank you so much.
Arjuniya Gopi Mataji.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, Dandavatam. Sorry, basically, I understand that the best thing we can do for Pitrus is performing our Krishna consciousness very diligently. But then, so many devotees nowadays are insisting that we perform Pitru, you know, Shraddhas. And then especially, they say our day, our 1 year is equal to 1 day for them. And if we don't give them Krishna Prasad, then they will be hungry and then they will curse us. Or especially when our Pitrus are not devotees. I mean, then what is the relevance? I mean, I understand that to please the family members, you may have to do, but Shastric explanation is what? I mean, do we do it or no?
Well, are there Shastras which recommend that we should perform Shraddha? Yes.
Garud
but
Quran,
for whom? But for whom? Okay. Because you asked this question, let us see what do the Shastras say. And the question that you asked, Mataji, I have a counter question to ask you, just out of curiosity. You said, because I know you have been practicing Krishna consciousness for many, many years, but for some reason in your question, you said devotees nowadays. So you said devotees nowadays. Why did you use the word nowadays? Can you please clarify?
Prabhu, because I don't know whether they were saying it earlier also, but nowadays because of the media, YouTube channels, I mean, it's being proclaimed so so very firmly that we have to do the Pitru Shraddha, especially in the Shraddha month. So that's why I'm asking. I don't know if they were telling earlier also, but we were not so exposed, or that time the media was not there. So, I mean.
So you feel that it is only according to me, it is only because of media, or okay, anyways, whatever may be the reason.
What I'm saying, Prabhu, is now we are hearing, and that's why we have come to know that okay, devotees should also do. Pehle to Garuda Puran mein likha tha, ye bhi nahi pata tha. But then now, because
Garuda Puran, it may be written, but it may be written in Garuda Puran, but whether that which is written in Garuda Puran, is it meant for devotees?
I don't know, Prabhu.
Okay, let us see. Because you asked this question, because someone was recently discussing about the need to perform Pitru Karyas for devotees also, why they should perform. And I heard that they quoted a few references. So one of the references which was quoted was actually, you know, in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, Arjuna says, Patanti Pitarohi Esham Lupta Pindodaka Kriya, in the very first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, I think 41st verse. Yeah, 41st verse. Krishna says, Arjuna says, Patanti Pitarohi Esham Lupta Pindodaka Kriya. So I will read the translation and I will read the purport. So this verse was quoted to indicate that, look, even Arjuna said, if in Bhagavad Gita, that if you don't do Pitru Karyas, actually your ancestors will suffer. So don't you feel any gratitude for your ancestors? You should, you should do these Pitru Karyas. This was the argument that was presented. Now, very fair argument, but we have to see what the Acharyas say. Let's see what Srila Prabhupada says about this. Okay. So I will read the translation. I will read the verse. 1.41 Bhagavad Gita. Sankaro narakayaiva kulagnanam kulasyacha. Patanti pitarohi esham. Lupta pindodaka kriya. Translation. An increase of unwanted population certainly causes hellish life both for the family and for those who destroy the family tradition. The ancestors, pitrus, of such corrupt families fall down because the performance of offering them food and water, pinda and udaka, are entirely stopped. Okay. So, purport. Let's see what Srila Prabhupada writes here. Srila Prabhupada says, according to the rules and regulations of fruitive activities, there is a need to offer periodical food and water to the forefathers of the family. This offering is performed by worship of Vishnu, because eating the remnants of food offered to Vishnu can deliver one from all kinds of sinful actions. Right? Sometimes the forefathers may be suffering from various types of sinful reactions, and sometimes some of them cannot even acquire a gross material body and are forced to remain in subtle bodies as ghosts. Thus, when remnants of prasadam food are offered to the forefathers by descendants, the forefathers are released from ghostly or other kinds of miserable life. Such help. Okay, so till here, it is very logical and fair. It looks like what Srila Prabhupada says is very reasonable. So definitely, it looks like devotee should also do this kind of, Shraddha and Pindadan and Udapinda Kriya, Udaka Kriya, etc. But see what Srila Prabhupada writes next. Srila Prabhupada says, such help rendered to forefathers is a family tradition. And those who are not in devotional life are required to perform such rituals. One who is engaged in the devotional life is not required to perform such actions. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of miseries. It is stated in Bhagavatam, Devarishi Bhutaptrinam Pitrinam Nakinkaro Nayam Rinicharajan Sarvatmanaya Sharanam Sharanyam Gato Mukundam Parihritya Kartam. Anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, gives up all kinds of obligation and has taken to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, and general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service. Sorry, just give me a second. Okay. Such obligations are automatically fulfilled by performance of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is what Srila Prabhupada says in that very verse which was quoted. Look, Arjuna says that if you don't do this Pinda Kriya and Udaka Kriya, the forefathers will suffer. Don't you have any gratitude towards your forefathers? Yes, we have forefathers to our, we have gratitude to our forefathers, but we express that gratitude according to our adhikar. Srila Prabhupada very clearly says here that such help rendered to the forefathers is a family tradition, and those who are not in devotional life are required to perform such rituals. One who is engaged in the devotional life is not required to perform such actions. Simply by performing devotional service, one can deliver hundreds and thousands of forefathers from all kinds of misery. Okay. This is one proof that was quoted. Okay. Another proof that was quoted was, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Gaya to perform Shraddha ceremony. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is showing by his example that all devotees should also perform Shraddha ceremony. So this is one example that is quoted. So now we are going to see what exactly the acharyas are telling. You know, what is the purport of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu going to Gaya? You know, let's try to see what is mentioned here. Because this is very important, because we all know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did go to Gaya to perform Shraddha ceremony. So, but what is the purport of his visit? Okay, let's try to see. I am just trying to get Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. Where is Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat? Okay, yes. Chaitanya Bhagavat, Adikanda, last chapter, I think. The Lord's travel to Gaya. Okay. So, I am going to share this screen with you. Okay. So, this is what they said. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Gaya to perform Shraddha to his father. So, by this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching that everyone should go to Gaya. Everyone should perform Shraddha to there. All devotees should do. Now, let's see what the acharyas say about it. So, here I will just read the relevant section. Okay. During the time when Sri Gaurasundar was enjoying his pastimes in Navadvip as the crest jewel of teachers, the philosophers of the atheists and the smarthas were being quickly propagated. So, the philosophies of atheists and smarthas. Even hearing the name of Bhakti Yoga was rare. the sinful people went on unnecessarily criticizing the Vaishnavas. Considering that the proper time had arrived to manifest himself, Sri Gaurasundar enacted the pastime of going to Gaya for performing worldly fruitive rituals in order to refute the atheistic and smartha philosophies as well as to bewilder averse persons. This was the purpose of his going to Gaya and performing this Pindakriya and Udaka Kriya. In order to bewilder the smarthas. So, in this one chapter, three times, in three places, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his commentary, he says that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Gaya to perform Shraddha in order to bewilder the smarthas. Three times he says that. Okay. So, if you are willing to accept that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Gaya to perform Shraddha, then why he went, that we should accept based on the explanation of our acharyas and what our acharyas say here. This is what they say, right? And so many other, you know, practically some three, four different proofs were presented from our shastras. That another proof that was given was Narasimha Dev telling to Prahlad Maharaj, "Oh, your father is dead now. Now you should perform Shraddha ceremony to your father." Okay, this is what he told. And the proof that was given was so therefore they said that even Narasimha Dev told Prahlad Maharaj to perform Shraddha ceremony. Are you a greater devotee than Prahlad Maharaj that you will not perform Shraddha ceremony? Okay, this is the point. So now let us go to that section and find out what the acharyas say about about this, that instruction that just give me a second. I'm just trying to find out yeah, so this is which verse number this is. Okay, I think I'm not able to find the verse number. Let me check. Just give me a second. Give me just one second. Because this is very critical. We have to find out. Because we have to have confidence that, you know, whatever may be quoted, you have to see what the acharyas are explaining in that regard. So that is very critical. So Srimad Bhagavatam 7th canto. So this is, I think, Prahlad classifies Narasimha Dev. Is it, I think, 7.9 only. Let us see. Let me just try to find that out. Okay. Then what does he say? Oh, that's it. Maybe 7.10 then. Let me see what is there in 7.10. Okay, I am not able to figure out, but I will find that reference and tell you. But very clearly, all the references that were quoted, you go to that exact purport and read what the acharyas say, they are telling exactly the opposite. No need to do. That's what they say. Right? So, anyways, but the point is, this is the point that so therefore, should we do? Yeah, if our acharyas say we should do, we should do. Should we not do? If our acharyas say we should not do, we should not do. So, oftentimes, you know, people say, I mean, this is something new. that suddenly they're telling that, you know, devotees should do Pitrukaryas. So now, so then that must be there in our Shastras, right? Like our Shastras means what Srila Prabhupada has written. So, so that must be there. Okay, thank you, Shyamukund Prabhu. 7.10.22. Thank you very much. Let's go to 7.10.22 and find out what the Acharyas are saying about it. That very same. And because just we have to see whatever is quoted, we should have trust. Whatever the Acharyas say, if this is what they say we should do, we will do. There is no problem. We have unflinching faith in whatever Acharyas say. If they say, oh yes, devotees should do, we will do. Okay. Thank you very much. So this is Kurutvam Pretakrityani Pituhu Putasya Sarvashaha Madangas Parshanenanga Lokan Yasyati Suprajaha. This is Narsingadeva speaking to Prahlad Maharaj. He says, Prabhupada's translation, my dear child, your father has already been purified just by the touch of my body at the time of his death. Nonetheless, the duty of a son is to perform the Shraddha ritualistic ceremony after his father's death, so that his father may be promoted to a planetary system where he may become a good citizen and devotee. Okay, this is Prabhupada's translation. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, my dear child, perform the funeral rites of your father, who is already purified completely by the touch of my body. Having the best son, he will achieve the best planets. So we will read both the commentaries of both the Acharyas. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti says, short commentary, since your father has been purified by the touch of my body, do not fear for his sins, but do the funeral rites simply for maintaining custom. Because Prahlad Maharaj was a king. As a king, he had this duty of Loka Sangraha Karma, performing Loka Sangraha. Okay. Let's see what Srila Prabhupada says. Prabhupada says, in this regard, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that although Hiranyakashipu was already purified, he had to take birth on a higher planetary system to become a devotee again. Prahlad Maharaj was advised to perform ritualistic ceremony as a matter of etiquette, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead under no circumstances wants to stop the regulative principles for those who are qualified for that. We will see this Prabhupada writes it in the next purport. Okay, Madhva Muni also indicates this. Anyways, in the next verse, Pitriyam cha sthanam atishta yatoktam brahmavadibihi mayyavesha manastata kuru karmani matparaha. Prabhupada's translation. After performing the ritualistic ceremonies, take charge of your father's kingdom. Sit upon the throne and do not be disturbed by materialistic activities. Please keep your mind fixed upon me. Without transgressing the injunctions of the Vedas, as a matter of formality, you may perform your particular duties. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's translation. O son, take charge of your father's kingdom as directed by the Brahmanas. Fixing your mind upon me, dedicated to me, perform your duties. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. Though you, as my devotee, are not supposed to do karmas. He does not say you need not do. He says you are not supposed to do karmas. By my order, do karmas to maintain the custom, because he as a king had to set the right example. But be dedicated to me without faith in those karmas. Even if you are doing, you should not think that this is my way of expressing gratitude to my pitrus. No, not for devotees. By thinking of me, even if you, okay, see this line. By thinking of me, even if you do not do the karmas, they are performed already. So do not worry. Okay, let's see what Prabhupada writes. When one becomes a devotee, he no longer has any duty to the Vedic regulative principles. One has many duties to perform. But if one becomes fully devoted to the Lord, he no longer has any such obligations. As stated in Bhagavatam, Devarshi Bhutaptananam Pitranam. Okay. The Supreme Personality of God nonetheless advised Prahlad Maharaj to follow the regulative principles. For since he was going to be the king, the others would follow his example. Thus, Lord Narasimhadev advised Prahlad Maharaj to engage in his political duties so that people would become Lord's devotees. Ejad Acharati Sreshtas. Then Prabhupada ends the purport by telling, one should not be attached to any materialistic activities, but a devotee may perform such activities as an example to show the common man that one should not deviate from Vedic injunctions. Otherwise, it is not needed. Like that. So these were the three prominent examples quoted, indicating that, look, the Shastras say that devotee should also do. But if you read just 2 centimeters below what the Acharyas say, they seem to be saying the exact opposite. They are contextualizing those instructions. You know, the statement of Arjuna is contextualized by Srila Prabhupada and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. The pastime of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu going to Gaya is contextualized by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sahaja Thakur. And Narasimhadev's instruction to Prahlad Maharaj is contextualized by the Acharyas, explaining, oh, how should it be understood? So ultimately, we are supposed to understand the scriptures through the explanation of the Acharyas. So, and this is what the Acharyas say. So, so suddenly, if someone says, no, 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 devotee should perform these kind of pitrukaryas and everything, then the question is, okay, so where is the proof for this? You know, is there a proof? So proof means not the verse. Proof means the explanation of the verse by the Acharyas. Because they have to explain how is it relevant for devotees like us. Is it relevant, Mataji?
Extremely grateful to you for such an amazing explanation. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Okay, there is something in the chat box. Okay. Is this the norm irrespective of the purity of the sadhaka, strength of faith? Srila Prabhupada in the purport you are reading, uses the term fully devoted. Does this indicate dedicated ashramam like brahmachari? No. Fully surrendered means jnana karmadi anavrita sharanagati. Sharanagati, surrender without mixing it with karma jnana yoga. That is what it means. So if it was, so it is relevant to sadhakas. So when Prabhupada writes, so now my question is, okay, my surrender is not complete. So, my question is, should I try to complete that surrender by becoming more dedicated to Krishna or more dedicated to the demigods and Pitrus? What is your answer, Shiva Kumar Prabhu? If the same question was asked to Srila Prabhupada, what do you think Srila Prabhupada would have answered?
Prabhu, to your question, Prabhu, I was actually thinking, till I become fully convinced internally that I am internally dedicated, would that mean skipping of, you know, evading away from my varnashrama responsibilities? Is in that sense I was asking.
Okay.
So I got your question. You are saying instead of doing this, I would rather focus and be fully, become fully surrendered. But I am asking more from the point of, till I become, I am not using it as an excuse to not do my varnashrama responsibility.
Okay. So, okay. You are using it as an, okay. Can someone use it as an excuse? Yes, someone can use it as an excuse. So, it is possible. But the point is, the very fact that you are even quoting from a literature which is speaking about pure devotional service, the very fact that you are even willing to accept it as a pramana in itself shows that your pramana is pure devotional literature. Right? So now, if someone has very, very weak faith, okay, so then if he gives up his Shraddha ceremony and if he weakly performs his bhakti, then his forefathers will get some weak benefits out of it. Weak transcendental benefits. And when he becomes very dedicatedly serving Krishna, they will get some strong transcendental benefits out of it. Okay. Because the results of bhakti are transcendental, they are not material. Right? But by performing Shraddha, the forefathers get some material benefit. So if even I do weak bhakti, still my forefathers get some transcendental benefit out of it. Okay. But however dedicatedly you do Sharda, they will get only material benefit out of it. So how is that an expression of gratitude? Say, so therefore, someone may say, no, no, you are doing bhakti for yourself only. You are not doing it for you are not doing it for the Pitrus. Someone may say like that. But the result automatically goes. Now you may say, how? Now my counter question to that is that, let's say you offend a person who is not a devotee. Okay. And then later, he becomes a devotee. And when he progresses more and more and more in devotional service, what will happen to you?
No.
What will happen to you? I'm asking you. You don't know?
No idea.
So if you offend a person who was not a devotee at that time, if he becomes a devotee, you get the offense for that.
Okay.
And when he progresses more and more, you will be implicated more and more. It will become more and more serious offense.
Okay. Correct. Okay.
So similarly, if your forefathers have helped you in many ways, they have done a lot of good things for you. Because, and if you become a devotee and you progress more and more, they will get a part of that result.
Okay.
Automatically. You don't have to offer it to them. They will automatically get it. So, not that anything will be taken away from you, but they will get the transcendental benefit. So, the best expression of gratitude to the forefathers is to sincerely practice bhakti. So, that verse, Devarishi Bhutapta Ninam Pitranam, is not telling that devotees need not feel grateful to any of these personalities. Rather, the verse says the devotees express their gratitude by their sincere surrender to Krishna. So, the way they express that gratitude is different. Not that, it is not telling that, oh, devotees need not feel grateful. That verse is not indicating that devotees should not feel grateful. Rather, that verse says gratitude should be expressed by sincere surrender to Krishna. And in the purport, the acharyas quote this verse, Yata taror mula nishechanena trippyanti tatskanda bujopashaka. When the root is watered, automatically the branches, fruits, flowers, leaves, everything gets the water. So, it is not that when I am watering the root, I have no interest in the fruits, flowers and branches. But I know that watering the root automatically ensures that the water and the nutrition reaches the fruits, flowers and branches. So therefore, it's not that if I am not doing Shraddha, I have no gratitude towards my forefathers, or I have no obligation towards my forefathers. Rather, I feel I should actually give transcendental benefit to my forefathers and not material benefit by sincerely practicing bhakti. So, which is a greater expression of gratitude? Performing karma to give some material benefit or performing bhakti to give some transcendental benefit? Where is the question of gratitude? We are not talking about gratitude. We are talking about expressing gratitude according to one's adhikar. If you have karma adhikar, you do shraddha. If you have bhakti adhikar, do bhakti. Where is the question of gratitude here? Gratitude, both are expressing. The form of expression of gratitude should be in accordance with one's adhikar. That is what it is. Like that.
Prabhu, just one general question, Prabhu. Extending this, in case if my involvement in bhakti seems to be intervening my material responsibilities in some or the other ways, so it's kind of having some adverse impact in the immediate run, while I look for the longer run for what we discuss on things like that. So Can this answer be, I'm asking, can this answer be taken even for any material responsibilities, Prabhu, if that takes a toll for my, for I am prioritizing devotional service over the material aspects of life?
Maybe, may not be. It is all, you know, it has to be taken. I will give you one example. Let's say, it is the time for your son to go to school. Okay. And that is the same time you hear Srimad Bhagavatam class. Okay. In the morning. Okay. So while, you know, the mother also has to cook, the mother also has to take care of so many things, the mother is doing everything, whereas the son sees that the father is just sitting with earphone in his ears. So if he sees this, so you may say that, look, more important than family responsibility is to engage in Shravanam Kirtanam. So one may say like that. But the impact, so it is not just our bhakti, it is how our bhakti is inspiring others also to take up to bhakti. If by such activity the wife loses the respect for the husband, the son loses the respect for the husband, the in-laws lose the respect for their son-in-law, and all of them lose respect for bhakti as a process, then overall this is actually very poor expression of devotional service. So I cannot say, you know, because ultimately, bhakti is not only our bhakti, but bhakti means overall the people, concerned people, they should also feel inspired in eventually taking up to bhakti. So therefore, what constitutes a mature practice of bhakti is something that we need to discuss. Because we cannot take my own bhakti as an individual island and everything is outside. We cannot say like that. So we have to see what constitutes mature practice of bhakti. That is, one-on-one one has to sit and have a mature conversation.
Okay. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay, one last question. Shyam Mukund Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Prabhuji, just one last thing, that we so much worry about Shraddha ceremony, about forefathers. But in Narad Bhakti Sutra, it is said that when the forefathers see that in our generation someone is becoming devotee, they dance there. So yes, one doesn't have to worry so much, because even if one performs very nicely Shraddha ceremony, but if it is not practicing devotee, then again they will take birth and again they will go there. Exactly. So, but when one becomes devotee, then they also dance there. They understand that, oh, now in some or the other births, we will also get chance to perform devotional service. So, this was the point.
That's the point. So, yeah, that's what this mentioned. Okay. Okay. So, there is a comment or question. Let's see. Prabhupada has given bhakti to the whole world. Except India, others don't do Shraddha ceremony. If it is important, Prabhupada would have asked every devotee throughout the world to do it. Isn't it? Yeah, of course. Yeah. So whatever Prabhupada says, we will do. If he says it's needed, we will do. So for us, you know, Guru Sadhu Shastra. And Shastra means Bhakti Shastra. Of course, the Dharma Shastras may say so many different things. But for us, we follow Bhakti Shastra. So the following should be according to one's adhikar. Sve sve adhikare yanishta saguna parikirtitaha. Viparyayastu doshasya. According to your adhikar, whatever one has to do, one has to do. Whatever is not according to one's adhikar, one need not do. That's all. Yes. Tanna Mataji, last question, and then we will have to wind up. We are already over time. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. There is one question in the chat box. Does it apply to the sons or even daughter-in-law of that family? Even I was curious about this, so I'm just repeating the question.
Does what apply, Mataji?
Does it apply to the son or the daughter?
Means what? It refers to what?
That we have to apply the Shraddha ceremony. Suppose now I'm a daughter.
No, I'm telling that the Shraddha for devotees, they need not do they.
No, I'm just saying this way. Okay, suppose, you know, I'm a devotee and what my karmas I make, it will go to my my mother's family, my father's family is how it will go. As a or as a daughter-in-law, it will go to my in-laws like that.
Whoever has helped you
okay.
or done something good for you, they will all get a part of your practice of devotional service, irrespective of whether they are your relatives or not.
Okay.
A close relative may not have done much help to you. A distant relative
right.
might have done a lot of help to you. A non-relative who is a friend might have done extraordinary help to you. If you become a devotee, in proportion to the help that you have received from them, they all will get a part of the transcendental benefit.
Thank you, Prabhuji. It was really good. It helped me a lot. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Okay, there are some other questions. I think we will take them later. We are already much over time. So thank you all very much for your patient listening and your enthusiastic participation. We will pause here and continue this discussion next Friday. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur Pad ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna.